Okay, good afternoon, sir. Could you state your full name and ABC number for the record, please?
Joseph Thomas Downing, 098715.
Thank you, sir. You appear before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency in reference to a parole hearing. I'm going to introduce the board members that will be conducting your hearing at this time. On the screen to your far left is the Honorable Michael Johnson. Then there's the Honorable Will Rittenhouse, who is our acting board chair. All the way to the right is the Honorable Louis Canonis. And my name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead this morning. Okay, we're going to go over some information, and as I do, you can correct me if you hear something that's wrong. Every so often, I'll just verify that we've got, you know, the basics down. Also, in the boardroom today, we have your attorney, and there's one other supporter that's listed here. There may be some more, but there's only two people listed. Once I've got all this information, I'm going to defer this to you and your attorney, and between the two of you, you can decide whether your attorney is going to speak for you, or you're going to speak for you, or a combination of both, okay? All right, so you're currently 48 years old? Okay, and you're serving a life sentence for first-degree murder, which began on March 29, 1993. You were convicted by a jury and sentenced on October 31st, 1996. You became parole eligible on March 29th, 2018. And you were certified for this hearing on December 11th, 2018, which is for regular parole home arrest or after your discharge. You've been before the board twice prior and were denied both times. So, a little bit about the offense. March 23, 1993, in Lake Havasu, you apparently had appears from what witnesses said that you helped the victim get into his truck, but apparently, based on other evidence, you went to his house and there was a fight or something, and subsequently, he was stabbed and killed. You put him back in the truck, apparently, and after going back by the club that you've been at, you eventually ended up in Coconino County, left the body in the forested area. Then the truck got stuck not too far away from there, and you went into Flagstaff to arrange transportation back to Lake Havasu. Truck was found, and then the body was found after that. The overall investigation led back to you, and you were arrested, tried, and convicted on for murder. Does that sound generally correct so far, sir?
No, it does not.
Pardon me?
No, it does not.
Okay, the volume system, the audio part of this is a little bit light today, so just ask that you speak up a little bit. So what's not correct? If we need, you know, we want to get it right.
To begin with, you stated that I escorted him from the bar, got in a fight in the parking lot, killed him, and put him in the truck, and ultimately ended up in Flagstaff. But that didn't happen. We left as a group from Lake Havasu and drove to Flagstaff to pursue other parties. Not people, but parties in general as college parties. It was no incident happened in Havasu or on the way to Flagstaff. Everything happened while we were up in Flagstaff.
Okay, well, based on the information that I have in our packet, this is based on the pre-sentence report, and which is based on the police report and the trial and all that stuff. Back in those days, you claimed to have never gone any further than Williams, that you didn't go to Flagstaff, and the phone records is what they used to indicate that you were in Flagstaff. Also, the wife of the victim found a blood stain in the driveway, and there was a footprint there which was ultimately traced back to a foot, it was similar to your shoes, its size, shape, and everything, as well as a footprint that was in the forest where the body was found. So I'm basing this on pre-sentence report, which is based on the trial and the police reports. Okay, so at that time you said you never got with the Flagstaff, and that was what was in the report, that you claimed to have never gone to Flagstaff, and that the police investigation is what indicated you did go that far, and that that's where you were trying to make arrangements to get picked up to go back to Lake Havasu.
Well, at the time, I was we never made it into Flagstaff. The body itself was found on the outskirts of Flagstaff. We never went into town. So when I said we never made it to Flagstaff, we never...
Well, originally you said you only went to Williams. Okay. And the truck was abandoned out in the forest near the body. Apparently got stuck in the mud or something like that. That's why it got abandoned. And I'm basing this on the pre-sentence report and the information we have there. Apparently there were footprints in and around the truck and had casts made. And those castings and I'm familiar with footprint identification. So it's generally, unless there's very specific markings, it's generally determined that it's similar to a shoe that was found, in your possession or at your home or something, and the bloody footprint in the driveway of the victim's house that his wife found, it also matched the castings from out at the scene, and the shoes of yours that they compared to it. So we'll go on from here. There was evidence collected, you were charged and tried and convicted of the crime. So we'll get back to the details in a few minutes. Looks like you had a criminal history in mostly in and around Lake Havasu. Not too much in the way of severity, but there was joyriding, shoplifting, larceny, drugs, DUI, burglary, but nothing that appeared that was anything violent in criminal history. You got very considerable programming. You have very good family and community support. We have no victim submissions or a letter of opposition from Mojave County Attorney that I have received out of yet. We do have a packet that is quite heavily weighted with medical information. And I must say that as far as being able to read those medical reports and make any heads or tails out of it, my head mush on that sort of stuff. So when we get that far along, I'm going to defer to your attorney to explain what's going on with that, since we don't have an IDD hearing going on here. That way you also understand that I'm not ignoring it yet.
No problem.
I don't understand it. Okay. So I think that's basic coverage of everything. I guess I want to go back to the crime itself, and as far as some of the details of how far you got into Flagstaff and those sort of things, there can always be some disagreement on them, or evidence showing one thing and which you can agree to or dispute, whatever, but the idea is back to the actual homicide, and I guess the easy way to do it is just say, did you kill the victim in this?
Yes, I did.
Okay, all right, so we're not arguing or I don't want to say arguing, we're not, you know, you're not disagreeing with the fact that you actually committed the crime, but some of the details of when, where, and all that are different.
Yes, there's minor discrepancies, but when you break it all down and you get to the reality of it, ultimately, I'm responsible.
Okay. And why did it happen, sir?
There was an argument between the group, and one thing led to another. Two people started fighting to begin with. Once that stopped, it kind of escalated into a group thing. Mr. Bergstrom, the victim, was loud, he was obnoxious. We were all intoxicated, but he was a little bit more belligerent, and he just started arguing with everybody, and we just reacted. We acted wrongly. And the initial part of it was we were beaten up.
But
according
to the autopsy, the victim was, the indications were he was severely beaten, and he was also stabbed 7 times.
Right.
Okay, so did this happen inside the truck or outside the truck after you stopped? Or?
We were all outside the vehicles.
Okay. So you talk about a group. Did anybody else in the group get charged with anything in this?
No, sir.
Well,
excuse me?
Well, I was going to say there's a thing in this state called felony murder, and if you're, you know, present and a part of a crime like that, even if you just witness it and you don't bother to tell the authorities or do anything to stop it, we see inmates trying to get out on parole, and that's their role in it. They were there. They were part of the situation, and they got charged with felony murder and ended up with life for it. And I would think the authorities would have at least some minor charges if there were more people present.
That's the complicated part. This was during spring break, and in Abilene there was 150,000 plus people all flocked down to the lake for spring break. So the group we got together with, I knew 3 of the individuals. The other 3 were college students that I had never met before. I don't know who they were. We all had the same interest. We were all drinking, we were all partying, we were just looking for a good time to continue the party. So I never knew those people.
Well, did you,
I don't remember their names.
Did you reveal any of that to the police when they were investigating the crime?
Yes, I did.
And you told them that all of you hurt and all of you were there when the body was dumped and, you know, everything was so good. Because the information that I have in the packet, and I'm not saying this is the gospel truth, it's the information that in the pre-sentence report,
right,
is that there was a fairly large blood stain in the driveway at the victim's house, which was back in Lake Havasu. And
yes.
And there was a bloody footprint that matched, you know, it was similar to your shoe there. But if all this happened on the way to Flagstaff, how do you explain those things?
Well, on this past Tuesday, I gave my attorney some paperwork. I don't know if he brought it to the hearing or not. But as far as the blood in the driveway, the wife of the victim, she can't even testify to how long the blood was there, and not mentioned in the police report or in your pre-sentence report, is the fact that a first aid kit in the garage was there, and whatever took place in that driveway, a first aid kit was used apparently with regular household band-aids. So that incident is completely separate from this incident. and the neighbors across the street from the victim's house were in the garage, working on cars well past midnight with their dogs and then five people total. They didn't see or hear anything that night. I can't speak on what that blood was from, when it happened or anything like that. All I can speak of is what happened in Flagstaff and how we got from Havasu to Flagstaff.
Okay.
There's police reports stating that that's quite possibly a whole different incident.
Okay, well, I'll accept that. I was a CSI before I retired, and especially with shoe prints, I understand the vagaries with shoe print identification, and there's definitely, the information in our report is definitely not enough to say anything conclusive about whose shoe it was.
The shoe prints that were possibly found up in Flagstaff, you know, I don't know how the cast came out. They didn't bring any cast into the courtroom, but very possible. Those are my footprints. Some of my footprints were up at the scene. I'm not denying that I was there. In the past, I have denied it, and that's my mistake. I'm not used to verbalizing that aspect of this. You know, I feel a lot of shame and a lot of guilt for my involvement. So outside of talking to my family about this, in a setting such as this, I'm just, you know, I'm not accustomed to speaking on that.
Okay. We didn't receive a Kirk progress report, so I don't have any information about your release plan. So what are your plans? If the board were to grant you release, what are your plans?
Well, I have a solid, supportive place to go in Glendale. And I currently have two standing job interviews with two separate companies. If I get released, they're standing by for me to come up and have an interview with them. If for whatever reason I don't obtain one of those two jobs, my intention is to get whatever I can, as you know, sooner the better. I'm not going to be choosy. And I have intentions on enrolling in RSI for solar energy certificate, to be certified to install solar energy.
Okay. So you say you have a place in Glendale to stay. Is it a private residence or halfway house or?
It's a private residence.
And you have any?
Excuse me.
Okay, I was saying, have you done any checking to see whether it would meet the criteria required for DOC to approve it?
Yes, it 100% meets the criteria.
Okay. Yeah, I apologize if a lot of that information is usually included in a progress report, and you just kind of touch on it a little bit, but like I said, we didn't have it. However, the other thing we rely on those for is programming, but there's quite a bit of evidence of a lot of programming in the package we have, a lot of certificates. What those two jobs that you say have interviews for, what type of work would it be?
One's electrical with Austin Electric, and the other one's construction with Erickson Framing.
Okay, so when you say electrical, like electrician, not supplier or anything, but actually going out, putting wires in and working on that.
Wiring houses.
Right, okay.
Wiring houses.
Okay.
And they also have a division that once I'm certified to install solar energy, Austin Electric has part of their company is installation of solar energy, so it will be just a transfer within the company.
Well, the way things are going, that's a good field to get into become proficient with.
I've already taken some courses on solar energy that's included in the back.
Okay. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Any questions? Okay, so I'm going to defer to your attorney, and like I said, he can work with you to decide who's going to talk and, you know, what can be presented, and if you have anybody, if you wish him to speak, and you can decide when in your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Honorable Acting Chair, Mr. Neal. The Honorable Acting Board Chair, Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and the Honorable Mr. Luis Quinones. My name is Aaron Moskowitz, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak on Joseph Downey's behalf. Joseph Downey is a special person who more than meets the standard for granting parole. We know this from the evidence. We know this from the people who have actually interacted with Mr. Downey day in and day out. Allow me to first address, however, the elephant in the room regarding the shoe prints. It was the Coconino County Sheriff's Department that ruled that the pair of LA Gear athletic shoes that Mr. Downey left at the truck where the victim was killed, the scientific examination report reads, positive identification was not made. The reason that that came up at trial, however, is that my understanding is that the comparison that was spoken to at the time, it was not a scientific comparison. It was, well, there's athletic shoes there and there's athletic shoes in this footprint at the house. But regardless, we all agree that that person up there, Mr. Joseph Downey, he did kill this victim. That's undisputed. It just happened to occur through a savage beating as opposed to a stabbing that someone did later. That's all. I'd also like to stress that the state's pathologist, the person who the prosecution put on the stand, Dr. Forrest Ritland, he testified that the beating was savage enough that that could have caused the victim's demise equally just as much as whoever did stab the victim later. So just want to share that we don't certainly dispute that at all. But I think this board knows better than I do just how rare it is for correctional officers to stand up and to put something on the record about what really makes a man or a woman, an inmate, worthy of parole. These are the men, in this case the men, who protect our community. They protect fellow inmates from the inmates. They protect themselves. And I think that when you interact with someone day in and day out, regardless of where it occurs, you get to know that person. And for many of the inmates, a connection is never made with the staff. But Mr. Todd Danicek, the former CO3, 20-year veteran of the Arizona Department of Corrections, he informs me that this letter that he wrote, that you read, is our first exhibit. How many has he written, according to that former CO3? Two in 20 years. This is a once-in-a-decade experience for something of this magnitude. All four of them, you know this, they all stress to you, the reader, that how rare it is that they do this. They find Mr. Downey to be a courteous, respectful man, even when the chips are down. And I made a mistake on page 3 where I said that our client is at SMU1. He's not. He's obviously at Iman Browning. I apologize for that. This is a hardworking man who is responsible in all of his duties where he volunteers as a pod porter. Very few of these correctional officers and the sergeant would write such a letter. If these correctional officers, or if this board heard or was submitted statements by correctional officers in which they told the honorable members of this board how violent and cruel and unworthy that an inmate would be to be released on parole, it's understandable that this board would trust and validate those officers whose judgment. In this case, the officers' judgment happens to be the opposite of that. But whatever reasons, whatever factors that these four honorable members would validate and give their imprimatur and likely agreement or trust to those views of the officers who were against granting parole, I would ask that you take note of the special persuasive value in your judgment of whether Mr. Downey's worthy of parole or not, of just how unique it is that these officers are taking some career hit. They're not unemployed, but there's some prestige hit in sticking one's neck out for a convicted murderer. We've seen the massive amount of voluntary programming that this gentleman has taken. He's done it in good faith. He's an educated man. He's a thoughtful man who the officers inform us in writing that he garners the respect of inmates and staff alike. When someone makes correctional staff sergeants and correctional officers' lives easier, I believe that there's something worthy about that. There's something unique and special about that. If this board votes to deny parole, then we respectfully ask for this board to please set the next parole hearing for 6 months out, not 12 months out, because Mr. Downey was sentenced under the old code of section 412A, not B. Members of this honorable board, today's decision can be the final step for all of the people who have played a unique and necessary role in getting us to this moment. The trial judge, the Honorable Stephen F. Kahn, he did the right thing. How's that? Because he sentenced Mr. Downey not to natural life imprisonment, but to life imprisonment with the opportunity for release after 25 years. The friends and family of Mr. Downey, two of whom stand ready and willing to receive this board's telephone call, they did the right thing too, reaching out to him and offering support during what we hope will be novel, during which they supported him within prison, and it's our sincere and genuine hope that he'll be released, and we could therefore syntactically say they will support him after he is granted parole. The correctional sergeants and the correctional officers have also done the right thing, clearing their consciences to document precisely why Mr. Downey makes what they call an excellent candidate for parole. The Arizona Department of Corrections did the right thing. According to CO2 Kevin Kales, the ADC upheld its end of the bargain. They imprisoned this man, they punished him, they offered educational programming. Horizon nurse Lola Redmond did the right thing by assisting Mr. Downey's counsel, yours truly, with selecting the appropriate medical records to show this board that Mr. Downey happens to be a gravely sick man. He has advanced cirrhosis of the liver, not from getting drunk or touching alcohol in 27 years, but regrettably because of bad things that happened at the Mojave County Jail when there were major plumbing problems and he was exposed to feces and blood. He has the alphabet soup of hepatitis, A, B, and C. He has something called hepatic encephalopathy, in which the liver damage problems that he has, it's building up toxins in his brain. Acute kidney injury and chronic renal insufficiency, stage 3 kidney failure, and perhaps most ominously, end-stage liver disease. This is the one where less than 3 months ago, the doctors seemed to be sure that if worse comes to worse, at least the liver, as bad as his liver was 3 months ago, at least it wasn't actively decompensating. That's now changed. Candidly, Joseph Downey may not live to see future parole hearings year after year or every 6 months. Of supreme importance, Mr. Joseph Downey has done the right thing, constantly taking the high road during the cold and harsh environment at Rounding Unit. It is he who leads by example, earning the respect of inmates and correctional officers alike. In my opinion, our nation, America, and our state, Arizona, frankly, we could use more Joseph Downeys out here in our community, not over there. The prison system, they already received the benefit of having Joseph Downey. I think that it's our turn to have a Joseph Downey in our society who might, in his own microscopic way, heal and repair some of the divisions that our country and our state is regrettably wracked with at this point in history. And finally, it is the honorable members of this Board of Executive Clemency who can too do the right thing through this final, ultimate step by fairly, reasonably, and justly voting to grant this extremely ill and extremely honorable gentleman the supervised parole that he truly and richly deserves. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We have three supporters who who would like to speak with us over the phone, one of whom is a very busy real estate professional who drove here for 2 hours and waited for 2 hours, as the honorable member saw. That was former CO3, Mr. Todd Danicek. He took the time to come here to speak, and he would like to, he's going to pull over on the side of the road now if the honorable members can telephone him.
Do you have a number?
Johnson. The telephone number would be area code 480-215-6351.
And that's his name, sir?
Mr. Todd Danicek.
Danicek?
Danicek. I believe it's pronounced Danicek, even though it's spelled with a C only.
Okay, and you said there was two more?
Yes, sir. If you'd like their numbers now, I'm happy to give them. That would be Ms. Diane Bynum. This is Mr. Downey's niece, who's open to medical testing to test her liver and hopefully save her uncle's life. Diane's number is area code 702-587-9386. And finally, a personal friend for 30 years named Heidi Osborne. And her number is also area code 702-496-5360.
Okay. I'm the technical wizard.
Louis got this down too. Stand by on the phone, okay? We'll get back to you.
Sure, no problem.
All righty. So we understand you wanted to be take part in the hearing for Mr. Downey?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. If you would just stand by, we have one more phone call to make. We have one other person on the line, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. last name?
Osborne. We pronounced Osborne.
Your message for 7024965360.
Hi, Ms. Heidi Osborne. This is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. We understand you wanted to participate in the hearing from Mr. Donnelly. We're conducting that hearing now. To get this call within the next 15 minutes, you can give us a call at 602-542-5656. Thank you. Oh, I think I just blew it. Mr. Darrington, are you still on the line?
Yes, sir, I'm still here.
Okay. Ms. Bynum, you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, the Honorable David Neal will be conducting the hearing. This will be the next voice that you hear.
Okay.
You can understand when I'm right in line attack.
Good afternoon. My name is David Neal. I'm the panel lead this afternoon for Mr. Downey. I'm going to ask a question of Mr. Downey's attorney. Do you have a particular order you would like these people to speak?
I do, and it happens to align with what you're doing right now with Ms. Bynum and then Heidi, and finally, if we could conclude with Mr. Danicek.
Okay, so
just what you're doing.
So Diane on the phone, and so we'll start with her. Okay, ma'am. Diane?
Yes.
I don't want to look your last name, and Mr. Dobson's handwriting is a little bit hard to read.
My last name is Bynum.
Bynum?
Okay. Bynum. B-Y-N-U-M.
Okay. Well, would you like to speak to the board now, and if you would, just state your full name, and then tell us what you would like to tell us about Mr. Brown.
Okay.
Well, go ahead. You're up first.
Okay. Hi, my name is Diane Bynum. My uncle is Joseph Downey. I live in Nevada. I have two daughters. I'm married and I work a full-time job. A few things I just kind of wanted to go over about my uncle, Joseph Downey. Him and I have been talking through letters and over the phone for several years now. He's always been a great listener through situations I've gone through in my life, and he's always given me great advice. My oldest daughter is 11 years old, and just recently, within the last year, she's been interested in writing him letters because she sees that him and I do that. It just makes me, my heart full, and makes me cry when he writes her back. And I read those letters to her because I could just tell, you know, that he loves her even though he's never met her. And, you know, he wants to teach her things and meet her, and also my youngest daughter, who's 4 years old. My dad is Jeffrey Downey. He is Joseph Downey's brother. My father and I have never had a relationship. I've only met him twice that I can remember. So being that my father's never met my kids, you know, my uncle Joseph Downey is the next closest thing I have, and I would really like for him to be able to meet my kids. And he's the only person that I have left on the Downey side of my family to just tell me things about that side of the family that I don't know because I've never been close to any of them. Even though I live in a different state as my uncle, he's always had me and my mom here for support. And we've always tried to help him in any way that we can, and we will most definitely do that, you know, in the future. me as someone who follows the law and holds standards for myself and my children, I know what it takes to be an upstanding citizen, and I know that when describing my uncle, he meets those characteristics. He's paid the price for his mistakes and his immaturity, but I also know that he's grown to become someone that I trust, and I feel that he deserves that chance to prove himself in society. I just can't imagine never getting a second chance and never being able to fix, you know, your mistakes. You know, because no one would ever graduate or become parents, be in lasting relationships. I just feel like life without mistakes doesn't exist, and life without forgiveness isn't worth living. My uncle and I have talked about his liver situation, and I did tell him that I would be up for going in and getting whatever testing done that I needed to find out if I would be a match with him, because I would be willing to donate half of my liver to him for him to live longer, you know, so that I could build a relationship with him and get to know him. I was only 3 years old when he went in, so there's not really much I remember about him, but I would really like to get the chance to know him and for him to meet my family and to just be there for him and for him to live, you know, a long life.
Okay. I thank you for that. And field any questions from the board? No questions from the board. Thank you, ma'am. You're welcome to stay on the phone and listen to the rest of the hearing if you'd like.
I would, please.
Okay. So at this time, I believe it's Mr. Benetech's turn. Are you still there?
I am. I am. I'm here, sir.
Okay, state your name and then tell us what you'd like the board to know.
Yeah, my name is Todd Danichek. I'm Joe Downey's last CO3. I just retired in October of 2018. Been in the job for just under 21 years. I put a speech together. I'm just going to kind of get it out. It's like a 3 or 4 minute speech. So, guys, just bear with me real quick. I'm just going to get it out and kind of go from there, okay?
Okay.
There are many inmates that conform to the norms of prison life. After all, this is their home for many years to come. Some even permanent with no hope of getting out on parole. The psychological impact of being in prison affects everyone. This type of environment does not pick and choose, merely the state of mind and remaining strong throughout the ups and downs of this ugly side of life and what humans are capable of. Prison has affected me in many ways as well, even to this day. Joseph, in my professional opinion, has reformed to see the error of his mistakes that he could unfortunately never take back and to learn, prosper, and grow into a human being that is worthy of being a free and productive citizen of society. He has taken advantage of all the different types of classes and programming offered to him at Brown Unit and has excelled in every single one of them. He's been extremely proactive in his pre-release plan with me, especially as a program counselor. He has asked me for employers that hire convicted felons, addresses for halfway homes, phone numbers, contact people. If he were given a chance to get on the parole, he wants to remain proactive because that's his pre-release condition. He's even written Social Security and requested his credentials, as well as contacting the MVD to make sure that he is on the up and up with them and that no fines or suspensions exist. This, in my opinion, does not sound like an inmate that has accepted his fate and gave up fighting. He is still trying to prove to himself in society that people can change and be better law-abiding citizens. In my time with the department, like I told you guys before, I've been just under 21 years. I've held a lot of capacities. I've been a correctional officer 1, a correctional officer 2, a correctional officer 3, a sergeant, and a lieutenant, respectfully. I have seen and heard just about everything from the criminalistic ways of thinking and acting and the mindsets of incarcerated inmates, all the way from level 1 all the way to level 5. After working there for any length of time, you become numb to people, interactions with people, especially with inmates, because at the end of the day, they all seem to have an angle that they're trying to expose for their advantage, and they seem to be out for themselves and only for themselves. However, my interaction with Joseph, this has never been the case. There were times where I had to tell him simply no, or sometimes there were things I'd gotten busy and forgotten about that he asked me to do in the day, and at no time when I came back to him was he ever... At no time was he ever demeaning, disrespectful, loud, aggressive, or retaliatory like the mindset of most inmates are when they get told no or they don't get what they want. I'm a firm believer of giving everyone in society, to include the inmate population, a fair shake. I have only written one impact statement to the courts some years ago, so this is not something I take lightly or do upon one's request. That's one statement every 10 years. I just want the gallery and the niece of Joe Downey and everybody on the board to kind of let that sink in. That's one person per decade. This is my second one. I just retired 3 months ago. So I think this holds huge value and weight to the professional unbiased reasons why I'm talking to you guys today. And I respect Joseph as a man who has made mistakes, but a man that has changed for the better and will be an excellent candidate for release from prison. I do respectfully thank the board and the attorneys for letting me speak on Mr. Downey's behalf, and I wish him nothing but the best in life, no matter what the final disposition is of this hearing. I thank you all for your time, and God bless each and one of you.
Well, thank you, sir, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. I appreciate that, sir. Thank you.
Hope you're enjoying your retirement.
I am. I've been doing this thing for about 3.5 years, and I absolutely love what I do. I love giving back, and now I get to see, you know, reach creation. And I feel that if I didn't do this for Mr. Downey, just as a human being that's got morals and ethics, I would expect him to do the same thing for me, too, because in our job of corrections, it's our job to read people and to kind of know the criminality of people, the psychology of people before they do what they do. And that's kind of what saves you at the end of the day. It's pretty much a saving grace. And I've seen and heard, not, I don't want to say anything, but I've heard a lot in my 24 years, and I would not be in the phone right now if I felt that Mr. Downey didn't have a crack at getting out there and making good on it, because I think he did learn. He's been in, I think, long enough. I think it's time for him to turn a new leaf and get busy living again and get out of there.
Well, thank you very much, sir. And you're right, we don't get recommendations very often from DOC.
I know you don't. I wish I could have been there in person. I was there. Unfortunately, I do have smaller children, so I had to be back out where I live out in Santana, about 2 hours away. So I know it would be more heartfelt in person, but just know that I was there, and I know you guys saw me there in the gallery, and I appreciate and respect everything that you guys do. So, you know, with that being said, I wish nothing but the best for Mr. Downey and his family, because he truly, I think he's a good individual, and I think he's learned.
Well, we thank you very much, sir. You're welcome to stay on the phone if you can, and if you can't, we understand, and we wish you a good day.
No, you know, I'd love to stay on the line because I'd love to hear about Joe some more, so I appreciate that, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Can we try Heineke one more time, or is it too late to make a call? Is it too late to initiate a call? May I give you the number again, just in case I erred in reading it last time?
Sure.
Wonderful. When you're ready, it's area code 702.
Go ahead.
496-5630.
5630?
Yes, sir.
Uh-oh. At 5360.
My apologies for the confusion. I have 702-496-5630.
Okay. Ms. Heidi Osborne?
This is
the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I understand you wanted to telephonically participate in the hearing of Mr. Downey?
Absolutely.
Okay, if you would just stand by for a moment. I have two other people on the line. I want to make sure they're still on.
Okay.
Mr. Downey, check, you still on? Mr. Danicek?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. I'm still on, sir. I'm
okay. Ms. Bynum, are you still on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Ms. Osborne?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Neal's conducted the hearing, so he'll be the next voice you hear.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Osborne. You understand that you'd like to address the board, so if you would state your name and then tell us what you'd like us to know.
Okay, my name is Heidi Osberg, and I have known Joseph for over 30 years. We met back in elementary school, fifth grade to be exact. Joseph was and still is a very kind, genuine, and honest person. He has always been friends with everyone. Everyone loves to be his friend. And a friend I, as well as my family, has always depended on in a time of need. Even while he's been incarcerated, he's been an ear for many of us. Full of generosity and willing to lend a helping hand. This is Joseph, and this is his character. I have always treasured my friendship with him. My family and I have kept in touch with him over the years, either by phone or in writing letters. Joseph and I grew up in Lake Havasu City, where we boated and rode bikes. We hung out at the Gap. The Gap was a teen center that my parents owned. And we would all walk there after school, whether it was we did it through junior high as well as high school. We'd do our homework. We'd get a bite to eat, play some games, and go home. I can recall Joseph babysitting a lot, earning extra money growing up. And funny, just recently, I've reconnected with one of the families he used to babysit for, the Shoup family, Mason and Christina. And they were sharing with me the fond memories they had of when Joseph used to watch them. He's always been great with kids. Even my three younger brothers, who now, of course, are adults, they all adore him. I can recall a time Joseph was at our house. My youngest brother, Rossi, he was acting up. My mom referred to my brother as being a bad boy. And Joseph, all of 15 or 16 years old, suggested that my mom should never refer to any of my brothers as being a bad boy. He goes on to explain to her that if he's a bad boy, he's going to live up to that name. And today, my mom will tell you what a great and valuable lesson that a young man of 15 or 16 years old taught her as a parent so many years ago. When it comes to work, I know that Joseph is a hard worker. He's a dedicated employee. He has worked multiple jobs from retail to all aspects of construction. He also helped out his mom, Sally, and stepfather, Carl, with their cleaning business in Lake Havasu. According to Sally, no one could clean those bank floors better than Joseph. And they cleaned every bank in Lake Havasu. She had hoped one day that Joseph could take over the business, and sadly, that never happened. Joseph possesses a great deal of integrity, and he has always strived to make sure he is doing what is right. Joseph has been faced with many, many challenges over the years, and he pushes forward with a positive outlook. While being incarcerated, Joseph has continued to work on bettering himself with continued education. He has also served as a mentor to those around him and to even those outside of the prison walls. He has helped so many. There is so much good he could do for so many if given the opportunity. A great contribution to society he would certainly be if released. He's a very humble and respectful human with a heart of gold. And again, this is Joseph. This is his character. I am confident if given the opportunity, he will rise above and he will show us all what he is capable of doing. And I can assure you that should Joseph be granted parole, I, along with others, will support him in what he needs to do to continue to build a productive life, a life that Joseph is so worthy of. And that's about all I have.
Okay, well, thank you very much, ma'am. The board have any questions? No? Okay, you're welcome to stay on the phone and listen to the remainder of the hearing if you'd like, and if you have other things to do, we understand.
Okay, no, I will stay on and listen, thank you.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I think, do you have anybody else that you'd like to present or anything else before final statements?
No other witnesses. Mr. Acting Chair, I would like to make an extremely brief final statement when you're ready.
Okay.
This is my
point. Well, I'm going to go through a little bit and then we'll give you the final word. Okay. Does any board have any other questions for Mr. Downey? Yes, ma'am.
So, Mr. Downey, has the involvement in prison politics ceased?
Yes.
I see there was a step down at one point, but then that was discontinued.
The administration told me that they received threats, so in consideration of those threats, they pulled me out of the program and brought me back over here.
That's why you are where you are then. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I've had no activity whatsoever in getting involved in the last 10, 13 years.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Nguyen.
Any other questions with Mr.
Downey? That's
nice. All right. Okay, Mr. Downey, we're nearing the end of your hearing. Shortly, we're going to go into a discussion to make a determination, but before we go that direction, we're going to offer you and your attorney a chance for a final statement. I believe your attorney wants to make that final statement.
Thank you very much. I believe Mr. Downey will have a final statement, and as I promised, I'll make this very brief. You've heard today from Mr. Downey's relatives. You've heard from a friend. You've heard from correctional staff. You've heard from your attorneys, from one of his attorneys. You've heard from Mr. Downey. Have you noticed, honorable board members, that there's not really a dichotomy? There's no difference between how all of us are perceiving this man. We are all united in favor of his release, whether we've worked with him, whether we work for him, whether we have had the privilege of being his relative or simply a lifelong eternal friend. All of us are here to rally behind this truly unique and special gem of a candidate who would be worthy of this honorable board's discretion to open your hearts and to do right, in our opinion, and to exercise your discretion for true justice. We respectfully ask for the courageous decision to please grant him supervision on parole. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Downey.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to make a final statement?
Yes, I would. If you don't mind, I wrote it down this morning so I wouldn't forget what I wanted to say. Before I begin with it, though, I would just like to say that I live with my mistakes every single day. And I'm just not accustomed to talking about them in front of strangers. So if it seems like in the past I may have been trying to minimize my involvement subconsciously, that would be true. I didn't intend for it to come across that way, and I'm fully accepting the responsibility that I should have accepted verbally last time. My statement is, I woke up this morning and I was thinking about my mother and what this did to her. It crushed her. She had a nervous breakdown, her health spiraled, and she struggled for years until she finally passed away. I couldn't have helped her with her death, but I could have comforted her through her dying. Instead, she was alone. I thought of all the other families too, people who, because of my choices, have experienced so much pain, hurt, and loss, and how their lives were changed. Through the inherent mistakes of my youth, I failed, and as a result, my mistakes, my shortcomings, have become a terrible burden to those I love and so many more. I have learned the consequence of failure. I am deeply embarrassed and saddened by my choices. There are so many things I hate. I hate what was taken from the other families. I hate that I became a burden to my family. I hate that my life has had such a profound effect on the lives of so many. This is baggage I shall forever carry, and though I cannot escape the ignorance of my youth, I am not my past. I know this is not all there is to my story. I cannot change the past. Lord knows I would if I could. But I can, and I have used it, change my future and myself. I've used this hardship, this tragedy, to look within myself, to learn about my attitude, my behavior, and my potential, to understand why I made the choices I did. I've spent all of this time acknowledging and improving myself. I've taken every single program that the DOC has to offer. I got my GED and sought higher learning through college. I have a job, and I've always maintained a job. In 15 years, I have received only 2 verbal warning infractions. I am the opposite of a troublesome inmate, as you can see from the staff recommendations of support. I lost basically all of my family, my parents, step-parents, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles. I myself have major life-altering medical issues, but I allowed none of this to keep me from working hard and preparing myself for a positive, successful, and meaningful life when given a second chance. The strength of my sincerity, the depth of my regret and remorsefulness is beyond words. But I have learned and grown. I am not who I was 26 years ago. I assure you, if given the chance, I will not let you, my family's memory, or myself down. I will be a positive, productive, and law-abiding citizen, not because I have to be, but because I want to be. So please, I'm asking for a second chance, a chance to contribute something more, a chance to end my story on a positive note. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, sir. The board will be going into discussion and to make a determination. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. If you think we're talking to you, we won't be unless we specifically address you. So just remain silent, but stay right there. You can hear the whole conversation, and once we've made a determination, we'll get back to you, okay? Yes. All right, we're in discussion. So this one has a lot. It's tragic, it's interesting. It's actually heartlifting with some of the comments made about Mr. Dunn. I think that without even, without considering the medical aspects of it, I actually kind of appreciate the way this was presented, because usually medical issues were thrown up as the reason to let somebody out, and they're kind of a side issue in the way this was presented. And if Mr. Downey's health is as bad as indicated, it is surprising, and it is heartening that that's not his major concern. I'm sure in his day-to-day life it is, but I don't think that it isn't being thrown up there as an excuse for release. It's part of a release and part of the overall picture. I think that Mr. Downey is taking ownership of the situation, the circumstances, and it's still a little cloudy as far as this group and the way everything is, but I will admit that the information that I had to delete that story from had some gaps in it. I'll be honest about that. But the overall picture here, I feel good about the idea of granting Mr. Bounty a release. I would, as in most cases with the current board, I would recommend it as a home arrest to begin with, and then we'll report card after a few months to see how things are going. But I am in favor of a home arrest release at this time, but I want to listen to discussion from my fellow board members. Mr. Canone.
Thank you, Mr. Neal, and I'll try to keep it quick. First of all, and this is not to shame anybody on the board, because I think we all feel this way, but we know that there are no victims representatives today, and I don't want to forget that there was a victim of a very tragic crime. The second thing for me is one voting board member is I have to remember not to look at aspects of the case as one standalone issue. In this case, really good behavior inside the Department of Corrections. What I look at is totality. So to get positive, I'm looking at a very positive totality right now. I think his behavior is an indication of his potential for reintegration into the community. But it's the whole that is giving me confidence that we can allow home arrest and monitor his transition back to the community safely. And that's where I'll hand it over.
Thank you, sir.
Comment, Mr. Johnson?
I agree.
You know, Mr. Downey said he felt confident that the residents that he was going to would pass muster, but we didn't really discuss that, so that would be the only issue that I would have.
Yeah, thank you. And on the issue of the residents, he wouldn't be released until it is approved, so.
Indeed.
Yeah, it would do. Rest that way. Well, so based on our discussion and the totality of the situation, I am going to make a motion to grant Mr. Downey, ABC number 098715, grant home arrest and deny whether parole or absolute discharge at this time.
Second.
Agree.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Canonis, agreed by Mr. Johnson in this written house. Okay, sir. The board is ready to grant you home arrest. There's some conditions I'm going to read. You may have to follow all mandatory DOC conditions and sanctions. I'm going to mark needs assessment referral counts and vocational education. You've been in a long time, and I want to make sure that you're doing things right as we move forward. But I'm also going to list on at PO's discretion, so that you can work with your PO. And he may say, well, you don't need a counselor. You're really good at this. You may decide you need some help once you get out there. No alcohol use. Random tests for drugs and alcohol. I don't think we have to worry about if you're recorded or not. Generally, initially on home arrest, this board will say you may not operate a motor vehicle. They're a lot different than they were when you were incarcerated. But it also gives you a chance to get out there and get reintegrated into the faster society and everything. But generally, that doesn't last more than until your first report card. And of course, no contact with victim or family. I didn't see if there was any restitution, but if there happened to be someone there, you're going to have to take care of that. That usually would kick in 60 days after. Release anyway. And this one is partaking of a variable program we have directed. So if your PO decides that you need something to assist you in your return to society, that's all you need. Okay, and do you think, can you supply the address that he would be wanting to, of the house that he would be wanting to stay in? Because I'll put that on there, that makes an indication we're moving in that direction.
I do not have the address, however, our office can set up a telephone call with Mr. Downey, and I'm happy to email it to you immediately.
If we don't have it right now, then we'll put that on there. It's possible. And there's, what is it, $65?
$65.
$65 supervision fee. And that would be after 60 days.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? I have her address, if you need the address.
Yeah. He has the address.
Okay, great. Okay, go ahead with the address.
813.
Yes. Uh-huh.
North 55th Drive.
North 55th Drive.
Glendale, Arizona.
Now, you're sure you're not missing a number on it? Because Glendale starts at 5,000 North, not 800 North.
No, that's the address I write you. That's your house.
813.
55th Drive.
Yeah, because because that's clear down downtown.
That's like Goodyear.
I'll list it that way. And what's the name?
Her name is N-E-V-A.
N-A-V-A?
M-E?
N-E-V-A.
N-E-V-A.
Yes, Nima.
Okay, Neva.
Rush. Her last name is Rush, R-U-S-H.
Okay, I'll put that down and make it verify. You can, and you, as the process goes, you can check with your, your CL3 there and verify the address. I worked for Glendale for a long time, and the starts at Camelback. South, there's not any that I know of that have a Glendale mailing address that are out of the city. There are some areas that you don't know whether you're in Phoenix or Glendale or Peoria and all that stuff. So I'll put it down as you listed it, and you can verify that with your CO3, okay, sir?
Mr. Neal.
Yes.
Yes.
You're right. That 815 is just Van Buren is 300.
Right. Well, if he doesn't know what the number right now, okay. Then I can put a question mark and make a note about that. Okay, so I believe that will end your hearing then. We wish you the best of luck. We'll see you back in about 6 months. Now, you do realize, too, that you won't actually be released until they've approved that address. And as long as there's no problems, that won't take very long. Normal administrative stuff. Okay?
May I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
You said you'd see me in about 6 months. Am I going to be dealing with you again or with the parole department?
Well, you come back in front of the board. And it's like a report card. Usually your PO show up also and give a report on your progress. And they generally don't make recommendations in those hearings, but they tell us whether you're doing good, bad, or indifferent. And if you're still out, you haven't violated anything very serious. But they will work with you. You have to understand, too, sir, you'll be on home arrest, which means you're still an inmate. And so you're going to have a lot stricter rules than if you're on regular parole. And you'll have an itinerary to follow and everything else. But the tight control helps inmates reintegrate without making mistakes. You tend to get in a little bit of hurry when you're on regular parole and don't have that extra tightness of the home arrest. But if you're doing really good and everything, then the hearing will be scheduled in about 6 months. And you come back in and tell us all about your progress with the cell phone and the modern-day living out there. And whether or not they're taking you to Walmart and shopping or not.
I look forward to seeing you guys again.
Okay, well, we wish you luck, sir. And another thing I want to say, too, is be careful about who you tell that you're going to get released. Because in the type of unit you're in, there are people in there that would be jealous of it that might try to get you to do something that would cause you not to get released. So just,
I'm well,
Yeah, just kind of keep it on the low.
Right.
Okay? All right, well, wish you the best luck, and we'll talk to you later. Okay, we're going to hang up the phone now.
Okay, thank you very much. You guys have a good day.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Okay.